Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. And today, interesting episode, we have David J. Flood on. He's an individual investor from the UK, specializes in very, very obscure businesses, both over-the-counter in the United States and on the AIM market in the UK. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Eric.
Yeah, it's interesting how we connected. I think I had seen something you had posted on Twitter, and I reached out to you. And then a friend of mine, do you know Dan Shum by any chance?
I do, yes.
So he commented, he's been on the podcast before and love his blog, and he commented on the post that I sent to you on Twitter and said, yeah, you definitely have to interview this guy. So here you are.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, yes. That's a good recommendation from Dan. I think his blog is fantastic.
He's a great writer. So tell us briefly about who you are, what you do, how you got into this, and then we can, dive right in.
Mm-hmm. So I'm 38 years old. I'm based in the United Kingdom. I've got a higher national diploma in Western music. I play the piano and the guitar. I got into investing probably back in 2013. At the time, I was thinking about buying gold. And I came across some videos of Warren Buffett on YouTube talking about how gold wasn't a particularly great investment. I didn't know anything about Warren Buffett or value investing. Some of the things he said really clicked in my mind, so I began to study more about Warren Buffett and value investing, and I became quite obsessed with it. So I started reading a lot of books, all the usual suspects, Security Analysis, Intelligent Investor, the Peter Lynch books, Joel Greenblatt. And the more and more I studied it, the more I realized that for small individual investors, the place to look for investments was in small companies. So over time, I began to focus more on Ben Graham type stocks, NetNets, and other kind of companies like that were selling at really, big, large discounts to the tangible assets. I just started to focus on really small companies. And then over the last year, I started to really look at the over-the-counter markets. I found Dan Shum's blog, No Name Stocks, and I also was looking at oddball stocks, over-the-counter adventures, and a few other blogs. And it seemed fairly obvious that this was going to be the place where I was going to find some really interesting investments. So since then, I've been focusing all my attention on the over-the-counter markets. Although I do still invest on the AIM market on the London Stock Exchange as well.
Interesting. Now, what company did you want to talk about today?
So today I'd like to talk about a company called Equitec Intel Corp, which is ticker symbol EQTL. Okay. So this is a company, it trades on the over-the-counter markets. It's a dark pink sheet, which means there's virtually no information, financial information available for the company.
When you say virtually no information, is it no information, or do they give some limited information?
There is some limited information that the company's begun to put out on their website. So I found this company whilst I was like just trawling manually through stocks, because I really like to look at the dark stocks. I think they're the most interesting.
Do you do a screen on the OTC website for dark companies? Is that what you're doing for that? Or
I'll normally screen for stocks between maybe like 1 cent and $1, and then I'll just look at American companies. I'll just look at common stocks, and then I'll just work my way through manually. Okay. And then any stock that I see that's crypto or cannabis or banking or any kind of financial stock or any mining or resource stock, I normally just don't even bother looking at them because they tend to be complete garbage.
What screener do you like to use by any chance?
So for the over-the-counter markets, obviously there's no real screener other than the one on their website for looking at the dark stocks.
Well, when you said you were looking for companies between a penny and a dollar, did you just mean on the OTC market website?
Yeah, on the OTC market website, there's a screener that allows you to. You can't screen for any fundamental data,
right?
But you can screen for things like what industry the company's in, or what the share price is. You can screen things like that. So if you can think of creative ways to find the kind of things that you might be interested in looking at and get rid of the things that are probably not worth looking at.
Yeah. When Jan Schwende was on, we talked a little bit about that too.
Yeah. I've picked up a few tips from Jan from reading some of his stuff. Yeah.
Really, really smart guy. Anyway, let's go back to, you came across this company.
Yeah, I came across this company, and anytime I come across a dark company, I always check a few things. I'll check the long range chart just to see what the price action and volume's been like in the past, where the stock's been. I'll check the share count, and then I'll go to the company website and just look and see if there's anything of any kind of information that may suggest that there could be potential value there. So with Equitech, which is, it's a nano cap. I think the market cap now is like $1.7 million. So it's tiny. I went to the website and then discovered that they were beginning to kind of emerge out of the darkness. And they were reporting a number of things that were happening with the company. The old CEO had stood down and a new CEO had moved in. He was already in the company, but he'd assumed a new position. They had ended an agreement that they had with a German startup company and moved manufacture back to the United States. They'd unveiled a new pricing structure, a new website, and then they were slowly amassing a sales force across the United States and also moving the manufacturing facilities. So when I saw this, I thought this is quite interesting. There's some kind of change going on here with the company. And anytime there's some kind of change with a company that's dark, there's the potential for large share price movements.
Yes. Why did the old CEO step down? Were you able ever to figure that out?
I think from the limited information that I've been able to come across, I think the company was just kind of floundering. They had an agreement with this German startup whereby the German startup would... it had a license to sell their products in Europe and I think the Middle East, but also they had a manufacturing agreement with them. So the German startup was manufacturing all the products, but it was doing it at too high a cost to be palatable to American customers. So their sales kind of dropped through the floor. And I think probably the old CEO was kind of, he didn't really know how to fix the situation. So he stepped down and a new guy came in and he seems to have really been quite productive from the get-go. So there's clearly a lot going on with the company. So when I started learning about all this kind of stuff, I was quite interested. So I carried on looking around on the website and then I found some very, very basic finances. There's not really much to go on other than some revenues and net profits and things like that. There's no kind of balance sheet or anything like that. But interestingly, what I did see was that the company had just begun to turn a profit after making losses in the previous years. So that was interesting to me as well. And then they announced that they were going to be releasing more financials. So as soon as I put all the pieces together, I thought this is probably worth taking an investment in this in the company.
And what kind of valuation multiples are you looking at in terms of the limited numbers you have for revenues and income, things like that?
So, I mean, Q1, the revenues were like $22,000.
Okay.
They made a net profit of $2,500. And then Q2, they made $32,000 and they just scraped a profit of $584. So it's literally kind of break even at the minute because the company's turning around. But these numbers, compared to the previous year, they were making losses of like, you know, $30,000-$40,000. So it's a marked improvement from that point of view.
Do you have any view on where things could go if they're successful?
Well, there's a number of things. They released some information about their sales pipeline growing. They said they've got a potential sales pipeline now for third and fourth quarter of this year of about $300,000. And they also mentioned a few other interesting things. One thing they mentioned is that they believe they've got a competitive advantage with their technology. They make spectrometers and probes that are used in the plastics and paint industry. They'll use it in the food industry as well. And they invented this technology. It's like an ultraviolet fiber optic probe system. And it can be used to kind of monitor the standard of the product being produced. So it's kind of quality control. But interestingly, they've developed software that goes with it. And they've now just developed what they call a closed loop system, where they can change the color of something as it's being manufactured via this closed loop system that they have with the probes and sensors sending information back to other devices that control the pigments. So they're saying this is something that's never been done before. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But they clearly seem to think that they have a competitive advantage, which I think is quite interesting. And then the fact that they've now unveiled a lower pricing structure, it sounds like the payback time for their customers is going to be reduced to 2 to 4 weeks in some cases, and in other cases, 3 months. So their customers are a lot more interested now from the sounds of it.
Interesting.
And they've also been building up a sales force across the United States. So there's a lot happening with the company. And I spoke to the CEO via email. I emailed him and he got back to me within like an hour's time. And he was very open to questions. So I asked him if the company was going to be releasing more extensive financials and if they were going to be regularly filing. And he said that was the plan. I also asked about whether he would explain what their competitive advantage was in more detail. And he said, we plan to do that. He said he's not been in the job that long, so he's been fixing the easy things first. But his end goal is to have the company regularly reporting on the over-the-counter markets.
Do you have any sense of what kind of net profit margin they would have?
Off the top of my head, no, because it's hard to judge at the minute because they haven't actually unveiled what the new pricing structure is.
Right.
So it's hard to see how that will translate. Plus, I don't know what their financial obligations are at the minute, so it's hard to judge as to what their costs are. So an overall net profit margin, it's hard to judge at this point. But for this kind of product, generally for specialized small instruments that are used in manufacturing, they tend to be higher margin than some of the larger larger machinery that's produced, just because they're so integral to the process, the manufacturing process.
Right.
They generally can be higher margin products.
And you said the market cap right now is what?
$1.7 million.
So I guess if they're successful in doing this, then the market cap is just too low. That's, I guess,
yes,
the nutshell thesis, right?
Yeah, and also just the fact that the company has just kind of been presumed dead by investors. So everyone's been ignoring it, that the share price has just kind of drifted down and then just sat there and it's doing nothing. And this is the time when it's worth finding a company that, where everyone's kind of left it for dead. And then you find it and there's changes beginning to occur.
Yeah.
That's the time you want to be buying into these companies because obviously once things start moving, it's going to be hard to get a good entry point on these things.
And how were you able to buy a lot of shares? I mean, is there a lot of liquidity on this or?
It's fairly illiquid just because of the share count. The share count is actually a lot higher than I would normally go with companies. I generally like a share count that's like 10 million shares or less. But with this company, the share count's like around like 100, think it's around 100 million it was. But even so, it's still fairly thinly traded.
Right. I mean, how long would it take to buy, like, say, a $10,000 position, you know, for people listening?
It's probably not as bad as some companies I've looked at. It just depends what price you're going in for. Sure. It always takes me longer because I go in with low-ball offers. I always don't like to pay even the asking price. I always like to get it as cheap as possible. So it probably takes a bit longer for me.
So you'll put limit orders in below what the current bid is?
Yeah, sometimes I will. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, just based on what I've seen the price chart do in the past. I don't want to be buying where something's moved up quite a lot. I want to be buying something when it's just basically sat on support and it's just doing nothing.
Well, if someone needs to sell, then they get forced to sell to you at a lower price, right? So it goes both ways.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a risk in some cases because the price can run away from you, but that's, there's always more.
You didn't lose money by doing that, so.
No, and there's always more stocks to look at, so it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. And your blog, again, is elementaryvalue.com?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So on there, you can find my write-ups on companies that are on the over-the-counter markets. I'll look at really tiny companies that may be trading for a few cents, or I might look at companies that are trading for $1,000 or more. Yeah. Just depends. And then I'll look at companies that are on the AIM market of the London Stock Exchange. Anything that's obscure, highly undervalued, or interesting, then I'll write about it.
Oh, it's cool. It's cool what you're doing. When did you start your blog?
Probably about a year ago now I started it.
Okay.
But I've been investing for, since 2013, but I just started writing probably a year ago. But that was after studying the markets for quite some time. I should say another way I generate ideas is to get the old Walker's manuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I work my way through them. And it's amazing how many of the investments are still there to be found. Like one company I found, Beaver Coal Company. When I found that, it was yielding 19% dividend yield. I wrote it up, and even after I'd written it up, the dividend yield went up to 23%.
Yeah, you'll be amazed that you could write about this stuff and it'll still hardly move the stock price.
Sure, yeah.
But I did an episode on Conair, CNGA, which I actually do own shares, and some of my clients own shares. Mm-hmm. And after I published the podcast, I don't even think the stock price moved.
Yeah. It's crazy. But then other times there can be quite large movements. It just depends how liquid the stock is.
Yeah, you never know with these things. I know Dan Shum, sometimes he'll write something up and you'll have an immediate spike, and then sometimes you won't. And
They do, but it's funny because I've gone and looked at a lot of the stocks that Dan's written about, and often they'll drift back down after a few months as people kind of forget about them or people have bought in their positions. So you can actually take positions in a lot of these companies even though they've been written about. And you can still participate in the investment. But I think certainly going through the Walker's manuals, and I managed to get some Mergent over-the-counter manuals.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked my way through them. The old ones, because the new ones are like $1,000 to buy. So I buy the old ones on the cheap when I can find them, and then I'll work my way through them. And it's also good if I find a company on the over-the-counter market, so I can look it up in these manuals that I've got to see any more information if there's not much available on the company.
Yeah.
It's a really useful resource.
It's funny. As we're doing this, I'm using a 1997 Walker's Manual of Unlisted Stock, second edition, to use as my mic stand right now.
Oh, nice. I'm using the 2002, 2003 Unlisted Stocks one for my stand.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they make great mic stands.
They do, yeah. but I'd also recommend that people, if you're looking at these companies on the over-the-counter markets, just start Googling things. I mean, you can find out all kinds of things just from, like, looking up their address.
Yeah.
Look, if there's any property, you can go and try and figure out the value of it. Looking on their websites. I mean, I wrote a blog post on Beaver Coal Company, and I didn't have any financials at the time, but I was just kind of guessing based on the information that they'd put out on their website. And kind of, I've got fairly close in terms of what I thought they were earning in revenue. And then I could confirm it when I managed to get hold of some financials.
David, do me a favor. When we're done, shoot me an email with any links you would like me to put up in the show notes, and I'll do that.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. That's, I could do that.
Okay. I think listeners might be interested in that the Beaver Coal article you had written, just to kind of get some context of what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting companies like that. I should say the ticker symbol for that is BVERS. There's a lot of interesting little companies like that. Pine Lawn Cemetery is another one that I wrote up. It's another interesting company.
I'm familiar with that one.
Yeah. Mm. Very interesting company.
Yeah.
And there's another one I just found recently. It's yielding about 15%. Conwest Associates. That's another one. It's a limited partnership. I found it in the Walker's Manual and looked it up. And yeah, it's yielding 15%. So the kind of yield you can get if you are a dividend yield investor, which I'm not particularly that interested in it myself, although at the right price, it can be a very good investment. But if you are looking for dividend yields, you can find amazing dividend yields on the over-the-counter markets, way better than you're going to find on the major markets.
Yeah. Well, I think all that matters is what investment rate of return you're getting. So whether that's coming from the dividend or the stock price appreciation, who cares?
But also with these high dividend yield payers, if you wait for a stock market crash and then buy them, you can be earning. I calculated, I think with some of the shares that were trading, you could buy Beaver Coal back in 2009 and it dropped. God, the price, I think it was so low, you were going to be earning like 30 or 40%. Just on the dividend yield because it dropped so low. So if you can score these companies when they really drop quite low, you can get pretty amazing dividend yields on them.
Interesting.
And they're very solid yields as well when you actually look into the companies and how they generate the money.
Right.
Particularly with Pine Lawn and Beaver Coal Company, the dividend yields are solid.
Well, interesting. Well, David, this was a pleasure. You're always welcome to come back on the show to discuss more ideas. And if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
So they can go to my website, which is elementaryvalue.com, and you can contact me there. I'm also on Twitter at elementaryvalue, so you can contact me there as well. Every time I write a new blog post, I'll post a link on Twitter. You can get in touch with me there. And I would just recommend all investors that listen to your show to keep looking at small companies, and that's where they're going to find the most value.
Well, David, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Take care.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.